This is a printout of the US Constitution. It's over 200 years old, but it's still considered by many to be the greatest political document ever written. But is it? Really?
There is currently a crisis of US democracy. In 1964, 77% of Americans had trust in the American government. Today, that's only 22%. Only 4% of Americans today say that the political system works well. In the Economist Democracy Index, the USA has been downgraded from a full democracy to a flawed democracy. And 4 out of 10 Biden voters and half of Trump voters somewhat agree that it would be best to split the United States into red and blue states. So it seems obvious that US democracy is in crisis. But what does that have to do with the US Constitution? Well, what I will show you in this essay is that the crisis of US democracy is caused by a number of fundamental flaws in this 200-year-old document. Article 2, Section 1 of the US Constitution contains one of the world's most important rules. Namely, the rule for how the world's richest and most powerful country decides who will be president and commander-in-chief. So a core principle of democracy is majority rule. The party or the candidate who gets the most votes gets to govern to reflect the will of the people. But this is not how the US Constitution decides who gets to be president. According to the Constitution, it's not the candidate who gets the most votes who wins, but instead the candidate who gets the most so-called electors from the states. And for reasons that I will soon explain, this electoral system can, absurdly, make the loser candidate who gets fewer votes into the winner, effectively replacing majority rule with minority rule. In the 2000 election, the Democrat Al Gore got 500,000 more votes than George W. Bush, yet George W. Bush got more electors and therefore became president. In the 2016 election, the Democrat Hillary Clinton got almost 3,000,000 more votes than Donald Trump, yet Donald Trump got more electors and became president anyways.
In other words, just after the turn of the millennium, it's happened twice that the candidate who got the most votes lost. And it's actually been very close to happening two more times recently.
So in the 2004 election, George Bush got 3,000,000 more votes than John Kerry. But if less than 60,000 votes would have been different in the state of Ohio, then John Kerry would have become president anyways. And in 2020, Joe Biden got 7,000,000 more votes than Donald Trump. But if just 42,921 votes in Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin would have changed, then Donald Trump would have won anyways.
So why can this happen? Well, mainly because the US Constitution gives smaller states a disproportionately large number of electors.
Wyoming, a state of around 500,000 people, has 3 electors, which is 1 elector per 195,000 people. California, on the other hand, a state of almost 40,000,000 inhabitants, has 54 electors, which is 1 elector per 720,000 people. Put differently, a Wyoming vote is worth almost 4 California votes.
As if that was not enough, many states also have so-called winner-take-all rules, which magnifies the unfairness. Here's an example of that.
So Wisconsin and Maryland both have 10 electoral votes that presidential candidates compete for. And in 2016, Hillary Clinton won Maryland with a huge 26-point margin and thereby secured Maryland's 10 electors. Meanwhile, Donald Trump won Wisconsin, but in a really tight race where he got less than 1% more votes than Clinton. But despite the tight victory, he also got all of Wisconsin's 10 electors. So regardless of how small the margin of victory is, you get all the electors.
The result of all of this is that, and this is truly absurd, it is possible, in theory, to win the US presidency by receiving as little as 23% of the popular votes.
Thank you. Article 1, Section 3 of the Constitution sets out that the U.S. Senate, which is the most powerful wing of Congress, shall have two senators from each state, regardless of how big each state is. So when the Constitution was written in 1787, the difference between the most populous state in the USA, Virginia, and the least populous state, Delaware, was about 9 to 1. Today, the difference in population between the most populous state, California, and the least populous state, Wyoming, is 68 to 1.
In other words, small states were undemocratically overrepresented in the Senate already from the beginning. But this overrepresentation has gotten way worse.
So during the last session of Congress, there were 50 Democratic senators and 50 Republican senators. But the 50 Democratic senators represented 42 million voters more than the 50 Republican senators. And this absurdity got even more absurd when the filibuster was introduced in 1970. The filibuster is a ridiculous procedural rule that makes it possible for a small minority of senators to halt all work in the Senate. This enables senators representing a minority of less than 25% of the population to block virtually any legislation. According to Article 5, it's not possible to change the Constitution unless two-thirds of both houses of Congress and three-quarters of the states approve. This is obviously extremely difficult to achieve.
To be clear, most people, myself included, agree that a constitution should be more difficult to change than other laws. But the US Constitution is so difficult to change that during the last 200 years, it's been changed only 15 times.
Even when overwhelming majorities of Americans support change, it is sometimes almost impossible to achieve. As an example, 70% of Americans believe gun control laws are more important than protecting gun ownership. Yet, it has been impossible to introduce much stricter gun control laws because the Second Amendment of the Constitution has been interpreted to prevent that. Similarly, 72% of Americans want to limit money in politics, yet the First Amendment of the Constitution has been interpreted to prevent most campaign finance laws.
Thus, in order to implement stricter gun laws or to limit money in politics, the Constitution would need to be changed. But because the founders made it nearly impossible to do so, reforms that are supported by vast majorities of the American people cannot be implemented.
According to Article 3, Section 1 of the Constitution, judges of the U.S. Supreme Court shall, during good behavior, serve for life. Once you're on the court, you can stay there until you die. So why did the founders want judges to serve for life? Well, they believed that if judges can't lose their jobs, then they will be more independent because they won't need to succumb to political pressures or political opinion. The founders did recognize, however, that judges appointed for life could end up staying on too long, even after they've become ineffective or corrupt. But since the founders, in the words of Alexander Hamilton, considered that the Supreme Court would always be the least dangerous branch of government, with no influence over either the sword or the purse, the founders opted for lifetime tenure despite the risks.
However, today it seems obvious that the founding fathers fundamentally underestimated how much power the Supreme Court and its judges would end up wielding.
In the breathtaking 1803 case Marbury versus Madison, a case that to this day is studied by constitutional law students across the world, the Supreme Court gave itself the awesome power to declare laws unconstitutional. In the words of Chief Justice John Marshall, it is emphatically the providence and duty of the judicial department to say what the law is. And because the Constitution is more or less impossible to change, the Supreme Court's power to declare laws unconstitutional confers immense power on the court. Power that today neither Congress nor the White House can properly countervail on behalf of the people.
There are plenty of examples of how the Supreme Court has wielded this immense power.
In Bush v. Gore, the court effectively decided the outcome of a presidential election by halting a vote recount in Florida, leading to George W. Bush's victory. And through its decisions in Buckley, Bilotti, and Citizens United, the Supreme Court, in my opinion, effectively ushered America into the neoliberal era by allowing corporations to spend unlimited amounts of money in US elections. In Dobbs, the court overturned Roe v. Wade, eliminating the constitutional right to abortion.
So in issue after issue, it's not the American people or their elected representatives, but the 9 judges of the Supreme Court who have the final say.
As the famous legal scholar Alexander Bickel once commented, the least dangerous branch of the American government is the most extraordinarily powerful court of law the world has ever known.
In light of this immense power that the court now wields, it's clear to me that the founders' decision to allow judges to serve for life was a mistake. A mistake that has compounded as life expectancy has increased from around 38 years when the Constitution was written to around 78 years today.
So from the Constitution was written until 1970, the average tenure on the court was 15 years. And even that is arguably a long time to wield immense power. But for the justices who have been appointed since 1970, the average tenure is 27 years, and it's getting longer. So when Clarence Thomas was confirmed as a Supreme Court Justice in 1991, he was 43 years old. If he serves until he's 90 years old, the age at which Justice John Paul Stevens retired, then Clarence Thomas will have been a justice for 47 years.
So with the Supreme Court, the founders put far too much power in the hands of too few people for far too long. So 23% of the popular vote can choose the president, and senators representing 25% of the people can halt legislation. Not even a majority of the population can change the constitution, and 9 judges who sit for life can declare any law unconstitutional. The common thread among these 4 flaws is that they enable a minority to rule over the majority.
As constitutional scholar Irvin Chemerinsky has noted, the United States is the only country in the world that chooses its chief executive this way, and the only nation where a person who loses a popular vote can be chosen.
In his book, No Democracy Lasts Forever, Professor Chemerinsky makes the case that the undemocratic flaws of the Constitution have led to the current crisis of US democracy. He also shows how the Constitution's original protection of slavery continues to haunt racial relations in the US. So to me, the US Constitution is a bit like the high-wheeler bicycle. It was revolutionary when it first appeared, but when people realized that a bicycle with equal-sized tires is safer and more efficient, they stopped using high-wheelers. And the US Constitution, like the high-wheeler, was revolutionary when it first appeared, but it has foundational flaws that no longer meets the demands of modern society. So perhaps it's time for the people of the United States to get a new bicycle.
My name is Andres Acevedo, and this is my YouTube channel, The Market Exit. I want to make more video essays like this one that you have just watched. Thank you for watching it, by the way. But for that to be possible, I am going to need your support. The simplest way to support me is to click subscribe and like and to share this video with your family, friends, and your colleagues. And if you really like what I do, I invite you to become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/themarketexit. Any amount helps. And to my existing Patreons, thank you very much. I am deeply grateful for the support. So why did I make this essay? Well, I have been thinking about the problems with the US Constitution ever since I took a course on comparative constitutional law during law school. And when I recently read Professor Chemerinsky's book, No Democracy Lasts Forever, I finally got the inspiration to make this essay. So I am a Swedish citizen. Why should I have opinions about the US Constitution? Well, because how the superpowers of this world are governed obviously affects the future for the whole world. So humanity has a long list of challenges ahead, challenges that we won't be able to solve unless the superpowers decide to do the right thing. So that's why the flawed US Constitution isn't just a problem for people in the USA. It is a problem for all of us. I should say also that I am recording this less than 1 week before the 2024 US presidential election. If you want to dive deeper into what I've talked about in this video, I recommend that you read Professor Chemerinsky's book, No Democracy Lasts Forever. It's a really well-written and actually really thought-provoking book that obviously talks about a lot more than the flaws that I've discussed in this video essay. All right, that's it for this time. Bye-bye.